Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 139. This week, we recap Windows Developer Day with Giorgio Sardo, including high DPI improvements, Windows Game Mode, and a public roadmap tracker. We'll also answer the question, what is Windows Sonic?
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Espose, the market leader of .NET and Java APIs for file business formats. Natively work with DocX, XSLX, PPT, PDF, MSG, MPP, image formats, and many more.
This week we have Giorgio Sardo, Senior Director in the Windows Engineering Team, focusing on helping developers build great experiences on our platform and devices, and he's calling us from his Surface Studio. How's it going?
Hey, very well.
So how's that Surface Studio work pretty good for Skype?
It's so sweet. It's amazing. I love it.
And is that's just the built-in camera then?
Built-in camera, yes. Okay. It does also have a built-in microphone, but for today I'm just using
headset. Yeah. It's pretty good quality though. I can imagine that thing is good for video calling.
Actually, I love it.
I put a computer in my kitchen and 50% of its purpose was just for video calling like this. So if I could afford the studio, I'd put that in my kitchen.
I definitely recommend it. I have a lot of people coming and checking out like every day. It's really good.
Yeah. Very cool. Okay, Carl, what do we have for the comment of the week?
The comment of the week we got off of our website from you, UWE.
I was saying, it wasn't for me. It was from you, yeah. Not me.
So he was commenting on Jason's opinions about the EarPods. He says, again, a great show and fun to listen to, but I need to say something to Jason's EarPod review. It seems you missed out on the only reasonable player in the Bluetooth EarPod space. The company is Braggy. It's from Germany, and it was a Kickstarter product. It's called the Dash. And since some days, they have a second product called the headphone. Both are far more functional and nicer of a product compared to what Apple produces. I was a backer and used them for some months now, and I really love them. Just have a look at the reviews worldwide, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And he goes on a little bit longer with his review. And as being somebody who's really interested in Bluetooth EarPods, kind of like Apple, but not Apple, mm-hmm. I think my additional research kind of really reinforced what you said. There's a lot more players out there, but they're way more expensive.
The ones that he referenced, I think, are the only ones that are actually cheaper than the AirPods. I want to say the ones he mentioned are like $150.
Most of them are about $300, and yeah. I didn't see anything that was even close to what Apple produces their price and
Isn't
quality.
Isn't that crazy? Everybody's like, they're so expensive, and they are. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not acting like $160 is nothing.
Yeah.
But they really are in that class of product. They actually are of the cheapest.
Because it's really the $300 to $400 for anything equivalent.
Yeah.
And you know, I saw his review and I was so excited. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go check these out and get some. And I just couldn't. You know, that's just a little bit too high of a bar for something that I don't absolutely need.
And here's the thing too, like if you have an Android phone, you lose a lot of the benefits of the AirPods. So then maybe you would go look at this. I'm just looking at the Dash here because I swear that they were actually less money. This was like one of the only ones I've seen that where they were cheaper. Maybe it was like an entry level like wired version or something. Oh no, the Dash Black is $299. Yeah. Oh here, the headphone is $149.
Yeah, they also sell it one ear pod at a time. You can buy the left or the right.
Oh yeah, look at the Dash left. That might have been the other price I saw, but yeah, the headphone. Yeah. Is $149. So that is like the only product now that I'm aware of that is less expensive. And I mean the only thing that the big advantage of the AirPods is just that automatic pairing.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So just the integration.
So if you want to get mentioned on the show, just like you did, send us an email to feedback@msdevshow.com. Comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Stitcher. We especially like those 5-star iTunes reviews.
Yeah, thank you, you. That was very good feedback. Okay, so we're actually going to skip the news today because we just have Giorgio for a limited amount of time. And what we're going to be talking about is Developer Day. I think it was called, what was the official name? Windows Developer Day?
Windows yes. Developer Day, yes.
Yeah, so celebrating developers. And I think this thing kind of flew under the radar if you weren't paying attention. I mean, I've talked to people and I mentioned Windows Developer Day. I'm like, what the heck was that? So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we amplified it because there was a whole bunch of like, you know, really good news in this that, I think each of the individual stories, were really popular, but I was just kind of surprised that not a lot of people, heard about Windows Developer Day. So glad to be talking about it now. So we'll have a little bit of commentary and we'll just, you know, we'll go through the announcements so that people don't have to go around and search for all this stuff. So I guess we should start in like, what was Developer Day? My question too is like, was this the first one?
Yeah, so back in November, we talked about the new update for Windows, like Windows 10 creators update. Mm-hmm. And we kind of share like our vision and our roadmap more from a consumer perspective. And we show like new devices, we show new scenarios that will be possible on this new update of Windows. But we really didn't talk about developers. And then in a few months, we will have a build conference where we're going to talk about the future vision of Windows and what we're doing, you know, to enable like in the next months and in the mm-hmm. next years. And so we wanted to take some time before we get to build to actually talk about the developer story of the creators update. And that's why we did this event online. So this is quite news for Windows. Instead of doing a big event with a lot of people in a mm-hmm. physical location, we decided to do it live online. And so it's available on demand if you miss it. And really like we celebrated a lot of the news for developers in the latest creator update.
So I heard a lot of people who did watch it really enjoyed the content that there was. Is Microsoft willing to say if they're going to throw a similar event like this going forward?
I think for us it's been, we're always looking at evolving the way we engage with developers. We love to meet developers in person. We love to meet them where they are. One of the things, for example, we do every year for a while, and this is something my team has been very busy with, mm-hmm. is the build tour, where we literally get on the road. Mm-hmm. And having that physical connection with the physical culture is super relevant. At the same time, we find that reaching developers online help us and also help them getting more access to information more easily. And so we're definitely experimenting and looking at ways we can be more open in our planning. And so instead of waiting for the big day, just sharing, you know, with more frequency updates and keep the conversation going throughout the year.
Very cool. Actually, we should probably dive into that. I know we plan on talking about that in a little bit, but I noticed that like there's a roadmap for, I think it was for, was it developer focused, but there's like a Windows roadmap feature, the features for the roadmap. Yeah. You want to talk about that since we're on the roadmap story?
It kind of goes back to the transparency. You know, mm-hmm. Windows has been for years this product where we have a release, then, you know, nothing happens for several months, then we have another big release. And we kind of changed that a couple of years ago as we introduced the insider builds. And now we release basically preview builds of Windows pretty much every week or every couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And what we announced last week is that we're also going to open up our backlog as well as our bug database. And what that means is basically as a developer, is building an application for Windows, you can have a full view on what we are internally thinking. If you are familiar with the Edge backlog, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. It's called modernstatus.ie. And basically, it's the idea that you can see which features we are considering, which one are in development, which one are available in the last preview that we just released, or which one went live. Mm-hmm. That way, you always have full visibility and transparency over what we're working on internally.
Yeah.
And also allow us to get feedback. And so if there is a feature that developers like a lot, please give us feedback and tell us exactly what you want to see. Or if there is something that is in our backlog and you're like, really, I'm not going to use that unless, you know, you provide something else, let us know. And so it's a very new way for us to engage and build the product.
Yeah, it seems like, Carl, it seems like there's been a lot of success with like user voice. So it's great to see that, you know, everywhere else, because I've put items in there and then I'll get an email that, okay, now it's being worked on. And just like tweeting that out, I can't believe like the number of retweets, like that gets people super excited. Like, oh, they're working on that feature that I care about. Sorry, go ahead, Carl.
I think that this portal, we'll have a link to it in the show notes, has a lot more visibility to the exact details, and it's a little bit more communication, a little bit more open about exactly what the status of bugs and features are. One great example is there's a former guest of the show, Ginny Keehee. She's been championing to get SQL Client into UWP apps, into the SDK for a long time. And she had brought that up during the question and answer period. And it was noted that there's something that was under consideration. So immediately when the backlog went open, several people noted that it wasn't there. And so, you know, people on the team were being able to be contacted, and it got there, and it's, you know, properly labeled under consideration. So it's really nice to be able to see that and you know, kind of hold Microsoft a little bit of accountable for the promises that it makes.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the feedback you just mentioned is actually, I believe, available in the last Insider build. So you should check out the our backlog again.
Excellent.
We're actually shipping now SQLite as part of the SDK. So you don't need to actually deploy it with your application. That improves performance, reduce the size of the binary, and put the accountability on us to keep SQLite updates. So all good stuff coming.
Yeah, a million eyes are better than one, I guess. this page, this is awesome. I love how you guys have laid this out. I think this is even more consumable than User Voice, honestly.
User Voice was very good for, and we're going to continue to use User Voice, by the way. It's really good to stack items compared to each other, to do the upvote, right? A developer goes in, put a feedback, and then other developers can go in and do up or down vote. This one is our view of that, right? So after we triage User Voice, we combine it with our internal planning. This gives like an up-to-date status on what is that on our dashboard right now and what is instead not considered because we're prioritizing these other items.
Okay, very
cool. You'll find there are connections between the two. So you'll find it in the backlog. We often point to this was, I don't know, like the top item on User Voice. So you'll find that connection as well.
Oh, yeah. I see that this is linked to User Voice. That's pretty cool. Okay, I like it.
All right. So you had mentioned that the SDK, and considering this was for the creators update, do we have as developers access to the preview SDK already?
You do. Last week we released it publicly, and so all developers can go and download it. In order, it's a preview. So in the spring timeframe, we're probably going to release the final version. But today you can go and download it immediately. All you need is a Windows 10 Insider build. I think the last one is 15,021. But if you go, I'll point to the resources on this podcast, and you can go and install an insider build of the OS, and then you can install an insider build of the SDK, and you're up and running. So it's available. It also builds on top of Visual Studio 2017. So in addition to all the greatness of the SDK and Windows 10, you also get all of the new cool things from Visual Studio 2017. Which I absolutely love. Like, it's faster to install, very clear setup path. It's faster to run applications, to connect on VSTS. It's really good.
Now, when you say faster, like, we mean like way faster to install.
Like hours faster.
Yeah, yeah.
Like hours. And, yeah. And also the size on space, one of the feedback that the Visual Studio team got in the past is that when you install Visual Studio, it can occupy quite a few gigabytes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you actually don't need all of that setup with you. And so now you actually select the workload when you install it. And so you can decide, you know, am I building a website or am I building an application? And then based on that, it optimizes exactly the resources that you need on your machine.
Yeah, and we
Visual Studio team has been very busy. Oh, there is another thing I want to call out actually for our friends in Visual Studio, which have done an amazing job this time. It's the ability to edit and continue. So you can run an app. The app is still running. You have the debugger attached. You can now modify in real time the XAML code and in real time getting updates to the app without the need to stop it, modify, redeploy, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's like VB6. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that is great. I want edit and continue everywhere. That is like such a good bar. So one other thing I just wanted to mention real quick was that we do have a date now for Visual Studio 2017 to go GA, which is March 7th. So that's pretty exciting. That was announced just a few days ago.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned edit and continue, and that's kind of one of the XAML features, but there is quite a bit more in the XAML updates. For example, SVG support directly in XML, or in XAML. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so we actually, the team working on XAML and working on composition, working on controls, they've done a lot of new updates. SVG has been a common request. Sometimes you might have already like SVG assets, like icons or some other assets that you want to just render as SVG. And although if it's possible to convert it to XAML, like it's an additional step. And so now you can just do it in line. It's safe from a execution perspective. It's performant. So that's a nice feature to have. And there is much more that the XAML team has been doing. For example, they're improving what they call connected animations, which is the idea that, you know, application get richer. The expectation from users is that your UI is more dynamic and is able to create an emotional experience with the user. And that implies that there is a smooth transition, for example, from a page to another page. Or if you click, if you're on a data grid and you click on a piece of content, you know, it smoothly jumped to the detailed view of that content. And so to do this, we introduce with the anniversary update something called connected animation. And now with the creative updates, we are making this even easier to use and more performant. So it's very easy to create a lot of effects. In fact, we demonstrated on stage, and I'll put some links, how to apply blur effect or how to apply lighting effects. And all of these effects also run at 60 frames per second. So unlike what we did in the past, where we created a lot of nice graphic capabilities, but they didn't always have the best performance, now you can get the best performance from the hardware and the best, you know, graphic UI into your application. And this is all available either in markup as XAML or, you know, in by code.
Yeah, I really see the maturity shining through now. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. Now, you did mention, and I was a little mean, but the XAML edit and continue, does that work? If you're attached to a device, does that work as well?
If you do what, sorry?
If you're attached to a device, so if you're attached to like Windows Phone and
absolutely, like it work, like our debugger works regardless. Like you can debug locally or attach to a device.
Yeah,
And you still have exactly the same capabilities. So you have the full round trip. It's super powerful.
Oh, so I can sit there and edit the XAML and then see it on my device immediately. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So that's yep. like
that you didn't have on VB6.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. No, that's
actually. Huge. Why it's something that maybe web developers got used to maybe in the last year or so on the browser. But there is a lot going on behind the scene when it's a native app, mm-hmm. and the ability to change the UI dynamically, it's including like GPU effects, etc. And so it's quite an outstanding achievement for the team.
That is like it is like life changing, because we had Frank Krieger on here talking about an app called Continuous for iPad, where you could develop an iOS app, and as you were developing, it was updating your UI. And I actually use that to develop some Xamarin UIs, and it totally changes your workflow, because, I mean, having that immediate response makes you 10x faster. So, I mean, the developer productivity is just going through the roof.
And exactly.
And then a couple other features here, like what about high DPI improvements?
So if you're especially a developer and you're used to have multiple screens, what you might have found, we had this in a while in the Windows build, is if you have choose different screens at different resolutions and you drag one window from one place to the other, sometimes the DPI were not completely right. And so you might find the window that has one size on screen A, and as you move it to the other one, all the labels now become bigger, bigger than what you wanted. And so we fixed that. And so now you get exactly the size that you expect. And we fix it in a way that doesn't require developers to do a lot of code on top of the platform. So they either get it for free, works, or there are APIs where developers are in full control of how they want to respond to different high DPI on the machines. And also we fixed like a bug that has been sitting there for a while, where if you resize the window very quickly on a Windows machine, you will see some lag, some effect. With like a green area, and then it will fill up. Now instead is a smooth operation again. So a little delighter that, you know, in a developer life actually make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're saying if I have like a classic WinForms or WPF app, there's a good chance that depending upon how my app works that I might not have to do anything.
That's right. Yes.
But if for some reason it still quite isn't giving me what I need to make high DPI seamless, then I can access these APIs with just a few lines of code.
Yes, we optimize for the most common scenarios in a way that developers don't need to do anything. It just get better. The application just works. But yes, we also give granularity to developers to override maybe the decision that the operating system does, or decide exactly like how to render it, to render the UI.
Yeah, no, I'm jumping for joy over that one for sure.
we got a lot of great feedback actually about this feature.
Yeah. One that I really love is, you know, obviously bash support. And I actually tweeted about this recently, and I couldn't believe how many people were excited about, well, I guess I can believe it because it's an exciting feature. But, you know, I showed running a Node.js application in bash, and then I was able to connect to it with a VS Code debugger. And that's actually just on, that's not even in the creators update. That's in the anniversary update. But bash, the power of having bash on there, I've had so many people look at that, especially like Mac users. And they're like, I might actually be able to go back to a PC now.
Yeah.
So what's in store for Bash on the creators?
We got we got a tremendous response to when we introduced Bash in the anniversary update. I do agree. Actually, we have a lot of friends and colleagues that that might have used MacBooks because of Bash in the past, and now they switch to Surface Books and they're like, oh my god, like this is even better. You know, I get Bash, I get Touch, I get, you know, modern PC. They're super excited. And so we've been really listening to the feedback from Bash developers in the last few months. And what you will find in the creator updates is really like the top feedback that we receive in this period. And so we introduced little delighters, for example. I'll start with this from this, which is actually big in that world, colors. So we improve the way colors work in the shell. In the Bash window, we support many more colors, and that allows for richer rendering of just the console applications. We introduce mouse support, so you can now select the mouse similar to how you used to do in the command window. So that's just little delighter. There have been multiple improvements in the Bash in the Windows subsystem for Linux. For example, support for the most common developer tools. One of the things we demonstrated on stage is connecting the Bash console to actually Visual Studio. And so you can start something in Bash. Then I said you want a rich editor, you can open up that in Visual Studio. And we even allow Visual Studio now basically open like an SSL tunnel into the Bash window. And that allows you to debug into the Bash window.
Okay.
And so it's you get the full fidelity of your Bash environment with the power of a modern tool for debugging and coding, which is like Visual Studio.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because you're writing for Linux, debugging on Windows. It's really all the same machine, but it's still legitimate. Yeah, somebody had just asked me.
You can compile, so you can just compile from Visual Studio and still compiling. The compilation is not happening as a Windows.
Oh, it's happening. Oh, that's cool.
As a inside your Bash.
That's pretty clever.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, I was cheating by using Node.js, and somebody just asked me. They're like, can you use VS Code to debug? And all I did was I just started the Node debugger within the Bash shell, and then I just told VS Code to connect, and of course it worked. I figured it would, but it just, you know, it's still like there's so much magic there that it's just hard to wrap your head around that it is that simple, it is that easy, and it just works. And that's pretty cool with the whole Visual Studio thing as well.
And the great thing is that, again, we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just connecting into the powerful Bash environment. And then for developers that are, you know, a dependency on that environment or love to use in that environment, they also get the benefits of modern tools. So that's a win-win for everybody.
And then, Carl, I don't remember if we mentioned on the show, but you can launch, I think we might have, you know, you can launch Windows binaries from the Bash shell as well, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
What else we got here? Go ahead, Carl.
All right. So there's been a bunch of Windows Store improvements too.
Yeah. So one of the things that we discuss, and I'll keep it a bit broader than just the store, on Windows, like we developers have multiple channels to distribute their application. The store is one of them, and we love it. And we are seeing more developers using it, and it provides a number of services. And we talk about a number of things that developers can do on the store, a number of new features coming to the store. There are also a category of developers that might have their own mechanism for distribution, or they might use other system like MDM tools or Windows Store for Business. And so we're really improving the spectrum across in terms of new capabilities and more control to the users. Lastly, we want to help users acquire more users, engage their users, and then monetize their application, right? And each developer will have a different business model. And so we made a number of announcements towards this path last week. For example, for acquisition, we announced the availability now of Facebook app install ads. If you're not familiar with it, basically allows you to create an ad inside the Facebook network. So the user will be available on Facebook website as well as their applications. And that ad can now point directly to your application as a Windows application. That's super powerful because it allows you to, for example, create very targeted campaigns. You can say, I want to target only people in this demographic, in these countries, in this age, that have interest for this specific, you know, areas or that are part of these groups that work at this company. So it's very, you know, targeted reach with the Facebook network, and then connecting that into the Windows ecosystem, and so suggesting users to connect and install your applications. So this was one of the things we announced last week.
I was just going to say real quick, in the show notes, Carl, we should include a link to the there's a Facebook page that you can get to under your it's somewhere under your preferences that will tell you like everything Facebook knows about you, and it's pretty crazy. Like it even knows. It knows like where you lean politically, and it knows like all these other demographics, and those are all targetable attributes, which is very interesting. They know a lot about you.
And that's how, you know, some companies out there build their business, right? If you look at Facebook and Google, but you know, there are pros and cons, obviously, that approach.
Yep.
Then the other thing that we announced is, and we actually released, is the availability of another SDK for analytics. This one is from Google. It's called Windows SDK for Google Analytics. And so we did this because we actually already have analytics into our platform. We provide it with Azure, we have App Insights, we have analytics in the Windows Store. But we also realized that there are a number of developers out there that already built like their own analytics systems on other platforms using maybe tools like the one from Google. And so we want to support developers where they are, and we wanted to give them a choice of which tools and which analytics to use. And so now as a developer building Windows applications, you have a choice also to use the Windows SDK for Google Analytics, which is easy to bring. It's just a NuGet file, so it's easy to bring into your project. With one line of code, you just send events from your application. Works very similar like to how you would track normally a website if you're familiar with that. So you can track like the page view, the pages, you can track like singular custom events. And then that all of these get reported through the same dashboard that Google is known for. Or if you want, you can just use the analytics in the Windows Store. And so one of the things we announced in the Windows Store is the support for custom events. And so you can send a custom event, and then you will see it on your store dashboard on the Windows portal.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, so just developers have endless choice here.
Right.
That's very cool.
And Espose offers a powerful set of file management APIs with which developers can create applications, which can create, open, edit, and save the majority of popular business file formats. Their product range supports a multitude of file formats, including Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, PDF documents, OneNote, Outlook, Project, Visio files, popular image formats, and many others. Espose produces APIs for .NET, Java, and the cloud, which can be utilized in almost any modern language available today. Visit www.espose.com for a free 30-day no-limitations trial. And if you get stuck, message the friendly support team for help. All technical support is offered free of charge. Remember, if you're a lucky winner, you will receive a free developer small business license for espose.words for .NET, a powerful toolkit to work with Word documents in your applications.
And then lastly, so this is more for SDKs on our partner ecosystem. From a store perspective, we've done a lot of improvements in the creator updates. I think the three main areas that we targeted were improvements in the submission. So now we provide a lot of more control over submitting application to the store. For example, we provide almost every capability that is part of the dashboard is also available as an API. And so as a developer, you can automate the process of submitting and keeping your app updating, submitting all the metadata. So if you have an application translated in 10 languages, you can just have an API that sucks the data from one place and like import and export the data from different locations very easy versus the need to do it all manually. We support multiple. One very common request was multiple users have access to the store account, and each user have different capabilities. So you might have the developer that can go and submit the package. You might have your marketing team maybe just going and looking at the analytics of that package. And so now you can control multiple roles, and this is connected with Azure Active Directory.
I've heard that request.
Yes, there you go. So it's times. Now live.
Yeah.
And then a lot of new capabilities in terms of analytics and monetization. This is an area that is particularly important for developers using the store to distribute their apps. So more ads capability, like new rich type of format of ads, new type of banners, helps doing building campaigns coming from your application. More APIs to respond also to the feedback coming from your app. So a lot of like capability for analytics. And then finally, if you're a game developer, there are tons of more capabilities for you as game developers, from trailers and live Xbox Live badges and conditional discounts. We got into this into one of the sessions. So if you want more details, just go and watch the session from Bernardo.
Yeah, I was really excited about some of the payment options. You said conditional discounts, but also paid upgrades. There's a lot of times where if you're going to release maybe a major version that you may not want to charge full price, but, you know, have a smaller price for those who have been with you along the way to get the full version of the app. So I thought that was those are some things that I've heard other developers really asking for. So it was nice to see those get included.
Yeah, and another neat feature that is coming, the team just finished developing, so you will see it in the next rollout, upcoming rollout, is the ability to say if as a developer you have multiple apps, you can also have a condition where if the user already acquired application A, you could apply a discount to application B. So you have a lot of more control into how you...
Yeah, because then you could buy like a suite of products.
That's right. Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah, because that's one of the biggest complaints about like the iOS store, and particularly now with like the iPad Pro is that there's none of those tools are in there to support that type of ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So it's great to see it on our side, because that's, you know, the people that are using these devices are going to be power users. So that's pretty exciting. Anything new on the I see it called a couple of different things here: the desktop bridge, the Windows bridge. I don't know. It used to be called like desktop app converter. I don't know what that's called now. What's the latest on that?
All of these. So all the names you use are all fine and interchangeable. Okay. Like, so it's not don't call me on the branding. I think we definitely have room for improvements from a branding perspective. But all the terms that you mentioned are all right. Mm-hmm. I think so. If you're not familiar with the bridge already, what it does. There are a lot of developers that have built like Win32 apps for many years, whether you're using BB6 or Windows Forms or WPPF. And because that's sometimes a big investment, jumping to a completely different architecture can take time. And so we wanted to help developers avoiding like a big jump and helping them on the journey. And so what the bridge allows you to do is when your application is running on Windows 10, you can actually call if not all of the Windows 10 APIs. And so it's very easy to call a new UWP API, whether it's Cortana or Windows Hello or anything else that is in the UWP world, from your legacy code, from your Win32 code. And also, once you do this, we also provide tools where if you want to distribute your application through the store, or in general, if you want to distribute your application through the new app installer experience that we have on Windows called Apex, you can actually do that. And so you have this tool, you just give your executable, so no need to do code changes, and the tool will repackage it in a way that can be distributed through this new modern system. And it has a lot of advantages. Number A, like it helps installing your application in a safe environment, where safe means that it's not like changing the way your application works. It's just making it easier to install it and eventually even uninstall it without, creating a lot of bloatware around the operating system, which is lastly like a better user experience. Two, it gives you access to new APIs, so you can call any UWP API from once you run the application for this converter. And then three, you also have access to all of the store services or store distribution channel. So whether you want to support ads or you want to do you sell your application through the store and letting the store, for example, take care of all of the infrastructure to handle the payment in different languages, different countries with all the right tax location, blah, blah, blah. We take care of all of that service for you. And as a developer, it's very easy to tap into this and potentially even build new business model or new revenue streams for your existing applications. And in fact, we shared the stories of a few partners that use it in the last few months, and they saw a lot of success. Evernote, for example, was extremely happy that since they're using the bridge to distribute their application, the Centennial Bridge, their users are always up to date. So it's easier to keep the users up to date on the latest release, and it's easier for users to install their application. Photoscape is a developer, I think somewhere in Russia, if I remember correctly. And what they were able to do is, like, they're building their business based on, it's a design, a photo design, photo editor application on the desktop. Mm-hmm. And so they're using the store to actually monetize their application. And this, like, they don't have the infrastructure to go and handle credit cards across the world. And so they just use that service, and it's very convenient for them. Mm. And then the last story that we shared is from Kodi. So Kodi was one of the first partner to actually distribute their application to the store through Centennial. In just like 2 or 3 months, they saw over 1 million users downloading their app from our store. And they got so excited that they decided to bring their code base, which is like a C++ code base, to UWP, and then release it to Xbox One. And so tap into new other Windows 10 devices. Cool. So a lot of momentum around the desktop bridge.
Yeah.
One of the other examples that I really like seeing is one of the demos, code demos that was given is when they took that, I think it was a WinForms app, and not only did they show it updating, but then they showed that when they updated, it does the incremental updates. Mm-hmm. So if you already have part of it downloaded, it only downloads the deltas.
Yep.
And how much quicker that is. And for people who have written installers in the past, that would be a monumental for each person to re-implement every time. So being able to get that for free is just really huge.
Yeah, exactly. That's part of the new installation package. So whether it's an app or a game, you now can start running your app even while the application is the setup is still installing the application. It's something that you might have seen before with Office. Yep. Actually, Office led the way with the product, and now the same applies both on PC and desktop to pretty much any application.
Yeah, I mean, this is just better for the users. I mean, that's what's great about it, because anybody who is not a non-advanced user, just being able to just have everything up to date all the time without thinking about it is huge. I mean, it is kind of crazy how much babysitting my computers have required in the past. So this is a welcome change. Let's see, what do we want to talk about next?
So right at the beginning, there was an announcement. First, I want to say we've been pronouncing it wrong for years, apparently. At least we have, Jason.
Yep.
So it's Telerik.
You're absolutely right. We got it wrong as well, and we had to clarify the day before.
Oh, did you call it Telerik?
I always call it Telerik. I thought it was Telerik.
Well, I think part of it
is Telerik, but
I don't know if you got this, but I got it from the Windows Developer Show. They would always call it Telerik, and like Telerik was paying them, and they were still pronouncing it wrong. Like, we have Espose right now as our sponsor, and like our first question was like, make sure that we're pronouncing this correctly. So I think everybody's just been trained wrong. And then I actually talked to a VP at the company. And then I just didn't feel like correcting her. Like, she called it Telerik. And I was just like, no, you're saying it wrong. But here she was actually saying it right. But luckily I didn't say anything, because I would have made a fool out of myself. Yeah. We've all been pronouncing it wrong.
The day before, during the rehearsal, so we were practicing like the end-to-end show. And Todd from Telerik was doing a weird phase every time we were saying Telerik. Like, no, guys, it's Telerik.
Oh, it's so my accent.
We learned something this week.
Yeah.
But anyways, they open sourced their UI controls. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to know is, from your perspective, what impact does this have on both the developer community and other control vendors?
So look, I think the I love open source. In fact, like you know, my team works a lot on many open source projects. Mm-hmm. You had David Kathui a few weeks ago in the show, and so you know we're involved even in other projects like UWP Community Toolkit or Manifold.js or Borland.js. And I think anytime there is a community participating in the open and sharing, you know, their code or sharing like their feedback or working with each other and sharing best practices, it's always goodness for the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so I love that. And so actually it was it's great to see that even vendors like Telerik see the opportunity to share their code in the open so that other people can not just request feature to them, but actually go and look into the code, how things were built, and potentially go and fork that code and create new controls or improve the existing controls. So I think that is all great. And that doesn't mean that other control vendors, and by the way, there are a lot of great control vendors and options on Windows, you know, they still provide a lot of value. And so they still provide unique controls that I know their customers are buying or are subscribed to. And so I don't think this is going to impact in a negative way. If anything, this is going to be good for the health ecosystem, create the right tension between, you know, when you decide to open source and provide, you know, a business model based on support versus when you decide to put a gate up front and then just sell your controls. Mm-hmm. The initial feedback and response we got is actually very positive. So we know that Telerik had some controls that the community was looking for, like data grid or charting. And so it's good actually to have this in the open. And I hope that others will follow the same path and or will just contribute to that. One of the things I observed directly with one of my team projects has been the UWP Community Toolkit. It's the power that actually developers have on influencing the platform. We first started where my team just put out like a few controls on the toolkit and most of the code was coming from us. And then 2 months later, I think 85 or 84% of the contributions now are coming from developers in the field.
Yeah, that's a big signal, yeah.
Right, and they know, you know, they're working day in, day out on real projects, and so they know exactly what customer need, and it's great to see that, you know, healthy ecosystem moving on. So I'm very looking forward at this and any other future open source project.
Okay, we got a couple other ones we got to get through. Like, what is game mode for Windows? I keep hearing about this.
Yes. I'll give you the developer version of that question.
Sure.
Which is really about, you know, game developers often demand more. They want more. Mm-hmm. More GPU, more CPU, more memory. I want to be able to really exploit the best of the hardware that I'm running. Mm-hmm. And that's what GetMod does. GetMod is a series of things that the operating system built right natively into your operating system that allowed developers, in particular game developers, to predictably request or have access to more resources when they need. And so this is something that we're introducing the creators update, both on Xbox as well as on PC. And lastly, we'll allow developers to do even more from the application, which is going to result in an even better experience for the end users.
Okay. That is very cool.
So, you know, you brought up Xbox. That leads to another question. You know, in the past, UWP games have been kind of excluded from the Xbox store. Do we have any changes in this policy going forward?
So it's never been like a policy enforcement or exclusion. I think in the past, the game on Xbox used to run, you know, natively on, you know, on the very, how do you call it, down to the meta, right? DirectX, very low performance, low hooks. And now we brought over the past year the same Windows 10 platform that you have on PC on Xbox, which means the same UWP app or games that you build on PC can now run on Xbox. And so if you're a game developer and you build like a UWP game on desktop and you want to be also on the Xbox, you can apply to the IDEA Xbox program. And there will be a very simple, straightforward program that allows you to also publish the same application to the console. The great thing is not just that the platform is the same, so the same code base will just work. Obviously, the interaction can be different from the PC, so you don't. It's less about mouse and keyboard; it's more about controller. But it's something that game developers know how to, you know, to code and develop into their application. And also from a store perspective, we use the same store infrastructure, the same store submission model, and so it's really true that you can build a universal app and run it on across any device from the Windows 10 family.
Very cool. Windows Sonic, what is that?
Oh, that's another cool name. So
yeah, I heard that. Somebody was really getting excited about the branding.
It's actually Sonic. Something that it's growing in the industry. The idea that sound is not just this, you know, we move from mono to stereo to the 5.1, right, 7.1. Now the idea is actually sound are three-dimensional. When we first released the HoloLens, I think HoloLens was the first device that really supported the idea of 360 sounds. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm wearing the headset and if I'm using an app or a game, they want to call my attention on the back, they can exactly point, you know, the location of the sound, and I hear it coming from there. And so, you know, mentally I turn around and I know exactly where the sound is coming from.
Which is amazing. So, like Dolby headphone was one that did that as well.
Right.
There's actually, we'll have to find a YouTube video, but there's a couple out there where they play this thing where the sound is going around your head. Cause the reality is you have two ears and just with those two ears, you can hear where something is coming from. So you can just exploit that, that human feature.
That's right. And so we introduced it with Windows 10 on HoloLens, but now we're bringing it to any Windows 10 device. So whether it's your PC or other devices, you can actually run 360 sounds, which also means that as you connect the new devices from our OEMs that will support Windows Holographic, you will also have the same immersive experience. Or if you record a 360 video, you know, using one of the new gadgets, you also have that experience as well. So it's great to see, you know, Windows evolving and really meeting the industry trends and being actually one of the first, if not the first, operating system to support it.
Cool. So you said it's coming to new devices, but I remember one of the distinct drawbacks on the HoloLens is if you had a 2D application, you didn't get that spatial sound. So is this coming to the rest of the platform as well in that way?
So not sure what drawback you're referring to, but so the sound obviously need to be designed to be three-dimensional, right? And so, for example, if you're familiar with Unity and how you build a 3D experience on Unity, it's as simple as placing a 3D object in the space and then assigning to that object a sound component. Okay. And that will directionally point the sound in the direction of that 3D object is facing. And so by design, a flat application that doesn't have the concept of, you know, what's the sound, you know, in the 3D space will not have a three-dimensional sound. That's by design.
Okay.
The best you can do, actually, a flat application will be it's by itself one directional sound, right? So it's a flat window, so the sound will come out from that window. But as a developer now, you have full control and granularity, and so you can tell the operating system like the direction and how you want the sound to be rendered.
That's cool.
Cool. So this was announced in the game section, but I think it kind of goes back to our kind of application lifestyle or lifecycle talk earlier in the store about how games are on download, you can actually start playing them before they finish installing.
Right. Yeah. We talked about this earlier in the interview, and we talk about in the game section, but really like it's a capability that is available for both games and apps.
Okay.
We call it intelligent install. And so you install the app from the store, and as soon as the application has just enough content to run, the user will know, so there will be visual cues, obviously, for the user, and the user will be able to launch the app. The app will start running with maybe incomplete content, and then as the setup process completes, then you get the full experience.
Cool, cool. And then I guess this is probably one of the last things that we're going to ask. We're almost out of time here. But the documentation, there's a whole bunch of documentation now at docs.microsoft.com, which I like because it's pretty easy to remember. So like kind of what is the status of that? What is the improvement in experience there?
So first of all, we are transitioning all of the documentation from what used to be the MSDN center into docs.microsoft.com, which is our new one cross company location for all the docs. What I love about it is that it's fresh. The way content is organized and the way SEO works is much more intelligent than what we had maybe 20 years ago. And the other thing is that the entire docs platform is actually open source. And so developers that want to, or anybody actually, for what that matters, they want to contribute, can now just go and fork the documentation and create their own, you know, edits. Same way as Wikipedia works today, which is great. And so we hope this is like the way we contribute the content. So internally, any team that wants to, you know, modify the documentation now can just go and do it the same way an external developer can do it.
I love it.
So it's going to be another great future for the community.
Very cool. Very cool. Anything else you're just dying to mention that we passed up?
We didn't talk about web, and we actually, you know, not all developers are building like apps. Right. There are a lot of developers that are building web applications that already have a lot of web content, and so we've done a lot of improvements in Edge, and so in our rendering engine, not just from a baseline perspective in terms of performance and security, but also we're bringing a lot of new features into the web platform. One I'm very excited about is WebVR. So you can now render 3D content like Babylon in VR from Edge. If you're not that fancy, if you're just writing code for, you know, boring LOB applications, you now have a sync and a wait in JavaScript. This is probably my favorite feature. So, you know, you can manage promises almost natively on JavaScript without the need to set up callbacks and have all of that spaghetti code that we got used to.
It's fixing the worst thing in JavaScript, yep.
Right, I think async await is going to change the way you write JavaScript forever. Yeah. And so now it's available in Edge. You can already start using it today. And there are a lot of new features like web payments. There are a lot of other capabilities. Another thing that we're introducing is the web app manifest. And then what allows you to do is if you have, a web content, web assets, a great web application, and you want to distribute that application also, for example, on the Windows Store or in other native store, you can now, there is a W3C manifest. It's just like a JSON file. You drop it on your website, and then with simple tools, you can convert that into an app. In fact, we are releasing, I believe, today, so this might be actually very new, a tool in preview called PWA Builder, which allows you to build a progressive web app starting from the manifest. And behind the scenes, we're just reusing the same, you know, architecture that we've been talking about in the past few years called Hosted Web App on Windows. No. But it's an interoperable approach, so it's a great web app experience across multiple devices.
So when you say interoperable, does that also mean that this follows the W3C spec for the web app manifest?
Yeah, exactly. So it means if you look at the tool, like it will build a web app that you can distribute to Windows, but you can also distribute to other devices. So we're using technologies that developers are used to or that are new but are happening in the standard space. And of course, once you have a web app on a specific platform, that web application can call into native APIs. In the case of Windows, I think we give the largest and broadest access to the Windows 10 APIs coming from a web application. Like a web app on Windows can call any UWP API from JavaScript. And it's very easy. So you don't need to set up bridges. You don't need to have like Cordova things. It's just the right communication, which is faster, easier, and better.
Perfect. Okay, Georgia, I know we're out of time. So where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you're working on?
Find me on Twitter. So I'm definitely active on Twitter. I travel the world. And so if you find me at an event, please come and say hi. But definitely G-I-Sardo on Twitter. It's my handle.
Perfect. Perfect. And Carl, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
And I'm Jason Young. You can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. So Giorgio, thank you so much for coming on here and talking about all this. That was such a great summary and really appreciate your insight here.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.